Greetings and welcome to Baron Crazes Visions of Horror, episode number 23, covering the week of June 4th to the June 10th. We started off the show with the band Ground Meat, and the track was Pathological Silence. They're found on Facebook and Bandcamp. All right, so June 4th, Sunday, the film we saw was Legend of Lizzie Borden from 1975. This was a TV movie with a TV-14 rating to it. Of course, this TV rating is something that's been implemented more sooner than when the film went actually off in 1975. This was an hour and 36 minutes long. Also on this day, I did see the film Captive Wild Woman from 1943, but for some reason, this film outshined that one and really had my attention, so that's why it's getting the coverage now. So obviously the film is not an anniversary movie. It does have the genres of drama, history, and mystery. So you're saying, wait a minute, Baron, it's not a horror film. That's right. The horror times did not always cover horror. We cover dark dramas, and we cover other films like mysteries or psychological thrillers. So this particular review, you would find it in our otherworldly section on the horror times. Now, when it comes to figuring out how to say the director's name, the writer's name, and a few of the cast members, I've gotten some help over here from the Google Translator, and that's what we're going to use right now to help us out, jacking up the volume over here to get a little assistance from the Google Translator help hand here. So, our director was?
Paul Wenkis.
Thank you very much. And now, who was the writer?
William Bass.
Thank you. Oh, hey, would you mind telling us who starred in the movie?
Elizabeth Montgomery, Fionnuala Flanagan, Ed Flanders, Catherine Helmond, Don Porter, Fritz Weaver, Bonnie Bartlett, John Beale, Helen Craig, Alan Hewitt, Gail Kobe, Hayden Rourke.
Thank you very much for your assistance. It's better than me trying to butcher all the names, right? So the company that put this out was the American Broadcast Company, or ABC. And this film was originally released on February 10th of 1975 and was originally a Monday night movie of the week. Earned itself since then a nice reputable rating of a 7.4 out of 10. I'd probably give it a 7.0 out of 10, just making it off there. Summary, pretty simple. In 1893 Massachusetts, Lizzie Andrew Borden is put on trial for murdering her father and her stepmother with an axe. Okay, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Now we have four taglines. I'll be very honest. I do not like any of the four taglines. They violate so many of my basic rules. Namely, they are not between 3 to 5 words long. You're trying to capture a person's attention. These taglines are far too long and are not going to get you there. So the first one is, accused of the shocking murder of her parents, she must prove her innocence or be hanged. Next, could this woman commit the crime of the century? Next, due to mature subject matter, parental discretion is advised. Obviously, this came out for the television audience of 1975. And then lastly is, Lizzie Borden took an axe. Gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. Okay, we're playing off the nursery rhyme there. I get it, but it's nowhere near the truth, and it's far too long. Just a pure note, we've had the air conditioner just kick on behind us, and there's not a thing in the world I can do to control that thing back there. So, excuse if you hear a little of a rumbling sound in the background. Again, nothing I can do except talk louder than it. All right. So if I was the person doing the tagline for this film, you know, I think it's pretty easy tagline, right? You know, Lizzie, did she do it? You know, 5 words, right? Lizzie, guilty? You know, there you go. Just put that, Lizzie, guilty with a question mark. Slant the words guilty, you know, or Lizzie, is she guilty? You know, things like that. Very simple. Let me get into the heart of the entire storyline. Now, the film did win a couple of awards. Outstanding film editing for entertainment programming for a special. And then we have Outstanding Achievement in Costume Design. I've always said it. Horror films almost always win the costume design category, especially for the period pieces and things. They are always achieving in that one area. Not to say always 100%, but a lot of times they're going to win in the costume design. Let's get into a bit of trivia on the film and see where we're going to go with everything. I should say first that the European theatric version of this movie shows Elizabeth Montgomery's nudity during the scene when she kills her parents. In that variation, she is shown standing naked, covered in blood, holding an axe. In the ABC film, careful editing implies her nudity, but it's never actually showing her naked. Basically, the European market does not have a problem with nudity, while the U.S. market is a little bit more prudish when it comes to that sort of thing. Now, here's a neat thing I thought was really incredible. Elizabeth Montgomery and Lizzie Borden, the real Lizzie Borden, were six cousins once removed, both descending from the 17th century Massachusetts resident John Luther. Rhonda McCure, a genealogist who documented the Montgomery-Borden connection, wondered how Elizabeth would have felt if she knew she was playing her own cousin. So it was something that was found out afterwards, and that she was actually portraying her cousin all those years later. So that's a kind of a like a weird, eerie moment if you think about it. The thing here is, you know, Lizzie did, you know, obviously was found not guilty. She inherited her father's estate and lived in a life of luxury and seclusion until her death in 1927. Now, I don't think I'm making a shocking admittance here, but Lizzie Borden was indeed acquitted of the murders because of the prevailing attitude of the day, which did not credit women with the capacity of being able to commit this type of hideous crime. But also because of the lack of physical evidence. So there was twofold kind of positioning there. It is also stated, of course, back then women did not even have the right to vote. They were held more in a highly, highly subservient role, if you would. Now, the forensic science of that time determined that the perpetrator would have been splattered with the victim's blood. But no blood was ever found on any of Lizzie's clothes, which, of course, made people say, well, wait, think about it. And this is not something they thought of it then, but that she was maybe naked is what has always been suggested. However, it does have an interesting aspect here that no blood was found in Lizzie's hair and there were no bloody footprints anywhere. Or a shoe print or a footprint found near the victim's bodies. The film speculates that Borden committed the murders and committed them in the nude because of the lack of blood evidence. However, again, the blood is also not found in that hair. And at that time, there was no indoor running water. Andrew Borden refused to have an indoor bathroom installed in his home. He thought it was a thrill that you didn't need. He was a very miserly type of man, eating a porridge that would have been like 4 days old and when he couldn't keep that long. So, you know, he didn't have these things. So then again, you know, for her to then go down into a basement and try to wash all the blood away, it was difficult. And then not only you say, okay, maybe she got herself all cleaned up, but what about her hair? She had long hair, and her long hair, there's no blow dryers, okay, folks? I mean, how would you have gotten your hair dried so perfectly in a short period of time? And little weird things there. And again, she had to dress very quickly. Think about this. It's Victorian clothing, corsets. It's not easy to get dressed in these outfits without some, you know, maid's help. Did the maid help her? But it was reported that the maid was outside washing windows. So I think there would have been, you know, kind of interesting aspects there. So the film again speculates on the Borden committing the murders, but never addresses these other elements. So, you know, it would have been interesting. And there's a lot of books out there that really discuss this entire topic in such a detailed level. Now, a couple of things of reference here. This is obviously a variation of the Lizzie Borden Took an Axe TV movie that was then redone in like 2014. And it was also based on the same real-life events such as Lizzie from 2018, the Lizzie Borden Chronicles from 2015, Lizzie Borden, A Woman Accused from 1995, Lizzie Borden Hashed and Rehashed from 1995, The Strange Case of Lizzie Borden from 2005, Lizzie Borden 2012, Lizzie Borden Took an Axe, again another 2014 film, The Older Sister from 1956, and then it covers a couple of these unsolved mysteries were done, and a few other variations to that. So it's obvious there's been a lot of stories on Lizzie Borden. And I just want to put it out there that you can find this on Prime. You could also find it through YouTube, and we put down a YouTube link on our script that you guys can go back. If you're looking and you're following along on the Hard Time site, you're obviously found the link. If not, you're just listening, then you guys know where to go for an actual link for the film. You don't have to pay anything, and you're just free and clear to watch the movie. Before I get into my comments here, I also would like to take a moment here to ask you to like The Baron's Crypt on Facebook and, of course, The Hard Times also on Facebook. Once we get to 5,000 likes or followers, I should say, on the Hard Times on Facebook, we will begin rolling out our giveaways at that time. So be on the lookout for that to start happening. We're about, I think, 37 followers away from that. So we're really getting close. All right. So for my opinion on the film, I liked the movie. I really did. It was fascinating on a lot of different levels. Elizabeth Montgomery did an excellent portrayal of Lizzie Borden. I thought it was just really well, got the tone, got everything down just right. The set, the costumes, the acting, it really adapts well, makes it kind of believable that it's 1892 Fall River, Massachusetts. And of course, Lizzie never admitted the killings, and how we see how some people see how she got away with it. Kind of an interesting mix of fact and speculation. It's got a bit of an atmospheric moment to it, some violent happenings, shocking for a television movie of 1975. But again, it didn't ignite a huge great deal of controversy for its brief showing, if you would. Montgomery is also chewing as Lizzie Borden. I've got to say that again. I really do. I got to hammer that home to you all. I mean, she's portraying an unmarried 32-year-old woman who's still living at home with her father, her sister, and her stepmother. And, you know, basically there's been somebody's broken into the home and there's some leeriness there. Was it Lizzie? Was she starting to set up a bit of crime happening to the home? Well, we will never know. And of course, you know, again, her father and her stepmother are axed to death. And there's a lot of interesting aspects, because there's one thing that a lot of people think is fake, and I've been to the actual Lizzie Borden house in Falls River, and one of the things that was always weird, and people just thought it was like part of the movie, but in real life, when the bodies were finally discovered, they were then laid out, believe it or not, they were laid out on the dining room table in the dining room there, just laid out. Husband and wife next to each other with a couple white sheets draped over them and the blood just soaking through onto the sheet and onto the wood itself and even dripping down onto the floor. Yeah, they're doing part of the body placement there. So they picked the bodies up from where they found them, you know, no real investigation of those locations, and then laying them down on the table. And then having the sister come in and say, "I'm sorry, you have to look at your parents here, and tell us if you recognize them," in the dining room. Think about that. That dining room is where the bodies were. You know, people go, oh, well, so-and-so died in this room. Yeah. Or, oh, my grandmother died in that room, or my uncle died in this room. Okay, it happens, right? How many times do you get to say, oh, by the way, we laid them out on the dining room table on full display? Say what? That's, you know, whoa, kind of weird, right? Again, it does have that chilling effect to recreate these murders, and all of it happening in an actual Borden's house, which was, you know, very interesting, of course. You do have almost a little of it feels like trying to, honestly, go for a documentary feel all the way, but to give a little touches of that, and the psychological suspense is done to the film also. What else can I tell you here? You know, the film does remind me a lot of the TV movie, which is a miniseries, two-parter, which would encompass, I guess, basically 4 hours in total, of Jack the Ripper that has starred Michael Caine in it. So this kind of gives me that other yin and yang of the of those two kind of films. Now, of course, the, how should I put this? The history buffs of this crime are going to note that they're finding the bodies in the wrong order. It was the mother found, excuse me, the stepmother found first, and then the father. But it doesn't really matter too much. I mean, I know there's some other factual things we're not getting all the way, but it's just a film that you can enjoy, and I would recommend it. So with that being said, I'm going to be closing this part out with a band called Lancaster Marion. Now, the first part of that is Lancaster, then a space, Marion, with the track Sweet Lizzie. Now, for those who are curious, the band's name, you may remember it as Father Lancaster. I always screw that part up, excuse me. Marion is the fictional character name in the novel The Exorcist. So, again, the band here is found on Facebook, Instagram, and Bandcamp. Thanks is going to go out to a PR company called Against PR, and the label is MDD Shop, found on Facebook. All right, so, I'm going to give you one other thing. I'm going to give you another track right after that. It's going to be from Midnight Syndicate, and that track is called Haunted Nursery. So that band is found on Facebook, Twitter, and MidnightSyndicate.com. If you're following along on the script, you'll see that there is a music video that's kind of creepy for Midnight Syndicate's The Haunted Nursery. So enjoy that. All right, hopefully you enjoyed those two tracks. And just to purely note it, the Midnight Syndicate Haunted Nursery track there, that video, is scarier than the film I'm about to talk about. So, welcome to June 5th, Monday, and the film I saw here was The Nursery from 2018, not rated, an hour and 27 minutes long, and I swear, parts of it was longer than it needed to be. So it is celebrating a five-year anniversary, a horror mystery thriller film. I don't know where the horror is. I was still looking for it. Let me give you a little summary, and then we'll go back to about the director and writer and all that great stuff. So, summary here is, when Renee agrees to babysit for a family with a tragic past, a run-of-the-mill Saturday night quickly turns into a confrontation with unspeakable horror. Yeah, sure it does. Okay, so the director, we're going to get a little help from the Google Translator again, because we actually have two directors for this film.
Christopher A. Miklos, Jay Shapiro.
Thank you. And now for the writer of the film.
Christopher A. Miklos.
And let's get a rundown of our cast list.
Madeline Conway, Emmalini Friedrichs, Carly Rae James Sauer, Claudio Perrone Jr., Marco Lama, Nadia P. Horner, Monica Barr.
Thank you very much, Google Translator. Again, we would be lost without you. The company that put out the film was Uncorked Entertainment. This film got a 3.5 out of 10. So yes, not a good movie. Kind of a dud. Tagline, here we go. Death isn't always final. Okay. All right, I guess we'll let that one go. Found on the DVD. And, God. All right, here we go. First of all, I got to ask, what the hell is going on in this movie? I mean, that is something that I asked myself multiple times throughout the movie. It's frustrating. It seems so sluggish. The pacing just feels like they're trying to get somewhere but generate no tension. There's nothing that they can build on. Everything they try to build on just falls flat. It's a little boring. The cast, I know they're trying their best, okay? I know they're trying to give it all they got, but the acting, the chemistry between the characters doesn't work. It's really bad. Nothing really seems a redeeming quality from it. Did I state that the script is bad? Because the script is bad. It's just bad. The artwork for it, I know I've seen it somewhere before. It looks way too familiar. So if you guys know where that artwork is from another movie, then you're more than happy to scream it out in the comment section. But I know I've seen it somewhere. It looks a little too commonplace for me. basically, we got the babysitter kind of aspect, inviting some friends over, and they're haunted by a killer ghost. That's right. You're not going to have a ghost here, folks. That's going to be, a Casper the Friendly Ghost. It's not going to be a ghost that's going to make some fondue or something like that. Sorry, none of that's happening. You're just having a bad story, a bad script, bad all the way around. There's nothing here, nothing creative, nothing to just go, okay, I see where we're going. I understand we didn't get there. I didn't see where we were going. I mean, I was so confused by the film. I'm sorry to say that, but it was just not something I could really get into. Perhaps another time, another try, maybe, but nope, sorry. I'm out with that one, pretty short one there to give out. So with that, we're going to give you another band here. Now this one's going to be a little on the harder edge, a little bit more metal-ish, but I think you guys will like it. It's from a band called Sleep Lord, that's all one word, with the track Bigfoot. The band is found on Verber Nation. It thinks it's going to go out to Pure Steel Records, found on Facebook, Bandcamp, and Instagram. So enjoy this track, and we'll be back with another film in a few moments.
Here it comes, a pounding light type force. You see a fury.
So it's kind of obvious what the film for June 6th, Tuesday, was going to be. Well, it comes from the film title being Big Legend from 2018, not rated, an hour and 29 minutes long. Also on this day, we saw the Blancheville Monster from 1963, kind of a toss-up here. So we flipped the coin, and, well, heads was Big Legend, and tails was the Blancheville Monster. Heads won it. That's what we're talking about here. All right. Sometimes that's how easy we're picking the film, just because, I don't know. You know, we just go, well, which one are you going to do? And I said, well, I can't do them both. Flip the coin and let us see what happens. So, again, celebrating a fifth anniversary. This is an action adventure horror movie. The director was Justin Lee, who also was the writer. And as for some of the stars in the film, well, let's get into it. We have Kevin Makeley, Todd A. Period Robinson, Summer Shapiro, Amanda, I always forget how to say her last name, but it's W-Y-S-S, Lance Heckerson, Andrea Barbeau, who was in a film that had similar Bigfoot aspects to it called The Hoax from 2019. Then we have Scotty. Oh, I'm not even going to try Scotty's last name. Let's go with a M-A-S-G-A-I. He plays the Beast. And then Ashley Plates. So there we go. The film was put out by Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. The summary for the film is an ex-soldier ventures into the Pacific Northwest to uncover the truth behind his fiancée's disappearance. The film did get a 4.7 out of 10. I would say probably 4.5 is where I was subtle on it. Original release date was June 13th of 2018. Taglines, we got two of them, and they are in my kind of wheelhouse. So number one, monsters are real, all right? The myth is true. Simple, to the point, anyone can understand that. Monsters are real, we got it, we get it, okay? That's locked it in, no problem. And myth. The myth is true. So we're saying there's a myth, and now here's the reality to that myth. A lot of the filming here was done with the Lewis River Falls Guilford Pinochet National Forest in Washington State. A little trivia for you, you always will enjoy. This is Lance Heckerson's fourth Sasquatch / Bigfoot movie. I believe, I could be wrong about that. Somebody here is saying there's five, but I really think there's only four. The others would be Untold from 2002, The Abominable from 2006, and Sasquatch Mountain from 2006. So, you know, I guess he's got that Bigfoot itch, and he's just craving to get more of those kind of movies out. The film does reference Predator from 1987. All right, so you're going to find the film on Freevee, Peacock, Pluto TV, Prime, and Tubi. Basically, you're going to find the film wherever you want to. It's pretty much everywhere. It is a classic Bigfoot movie, so we got that same kind of script layout for you. And there's some really nice nature shots being done. I mean, I think all the nature shots are really exquisite, really beautiful. So that cinematography works really well. It's just everything else being put into it, there's a problem. Such as, and a nod, people noted this, that the favorite word spoken in this movie is, Chief! Chief. Hey, Chief. Hi, Chief. What about this, Chief? Here we go, Chief. Look at that, Chief. Hey, Chief. Look at here, Chief. How about that, Chief? Chief, Chief. I don't know. I want to say something like 30 times you're going to hear Chief in this movie. Every time you can think, Chief, Chief, Chief. If you made this a drinking game, you wouldn't make it to the end of the movie, because if your drinks were alcohol-laced, there's no way your shots would be able to carry you to the end of the movie. You would be completely smashed by the time you got there. I mean, the scenery is gorgeous. The acting was, you know, adequate. The tension building, not as much as you would hope for. I mean, some, but not as much. But, you know, you got to mix that up with all your Chief talk, so be aware of that. Basically, this is a film about a man who takes his girlfriend into the woods for a camping trip. He proposes. She's then snatched by Bigfoot, and he spends a year afterwards in a psych ward after the incident because, you know, he said Bigfoot snatches girlfriend. Yeah, that's a surefire way to keep you locked up for a while because you're not thinking with a rational part of your brain. So, yeah, be aware of that. Of course, there's the bad dialogue. The blood color for victims does not match up realistically. And, you know, it just, I don't know, there's something about the film that just doesn't sell me all the way. I mean, I like a good cryptozoology film, you know, films on these creatures that obviously don't exist, but, you know, if they can make it interesting, I'm going to watch it. And what we have here is, you know, they try to put their best foot forward, but it almost feels like as they took the second step, their foot got caught in a bear trap and you went down. And I just have a problem with that. The film just feels like it's crawling its way to the ending at times. Sometimes it gets a little bit faster, sometimes it doesn't. And with all that happening there, it's just where I'm feeling lacking. I know that I'm saying, well, Barry, you're not giving me enough about the film. There's not a lot to give. We got beautiful nature shots on one hand. And then we got the same old kind of script on the other one. We got wonderful cinematography occurring through the wilderness around us. And then at the same time, we have this horrendous dialogue. I mean, it's really bad. Someone didn't sit there and say, okay, I'm going to write my lines out. Then I'm going to bring somebody over and we're going to go over these lines and we're going to see how they're working. We're going to film it. We're going to go over the lines. Maybe I can do the lines myself. We're going to go over it. And you can start seeing, yeah, that dialogue doesn't work, or the dialogue leads to a lot of open-ended questions, or the dialogue is just aimlessly plodding along and it doesn't make sense with any type of scenery items around. So all these things are playing in factor there. And I really figure that any writer will tell you this. You need to read through your dialogue. You need to make sure that your script is making sense visually with what the actor or director is trying to convey also. So all these things have to go together, and they're just not for this particular movie. Nothing special really to write home about. Now, with that being said, I'm going to leave you now with another track. This has come from the Heartwood Institute, and the track is The Legend of Hell House. This band is found on Facebook, Bandcamp, and Twitter, so enjoy it.
Thank you. want that line of approach. She's practically a child. My people tell me she's the best in the field.
All right, so with that music that's played there from the Heartwood Institute, and the track was The Legend of Hell House, it's pretty clear that you guys know what the movie was. For Wednesday, June 7th, it's The Legend of Hell House from 1973. It is a PG film, 1 hour and 35 minutes long, celebrating a 50-year anniversary, obviously a horror film. Now, as for the director, Google Assistant, the director's name, please?
John Huff.
Thank you. And as for the writer, it was Richard Matheson. And for our cast, hey, can we get a little more help, Google Assistant?
Pamela Franklin, Roddy McDowell, Clive Reville, Gail Hunnicutt, Roland Culver, Peter Bowles, Michael Goff.
Okay, thank you very much. The company that put it out was 20th Century Fox. So the summary for this film is a physicist and his wife, and a young female psychic, and only one survivor from a previous visit, are hired to investigate the Blescombe House, the notorious Hell House, where 27 guests had inexplicably died in 1927, along with most of the team of paranormal investigators that have been sent in the early 1950s. The film got a 6.7 out of 10. I would probably give it a 7. The original release date for this film was June 15th of 1973. And for the tagline, for the sake of your sanity, pray it isn't true. A little wordy, okay? I get that. A little wordy. You know, maybe something along the lines of, forsake, stay away. Something like that. Very simple. It tells you, if you value your soul, don't. And then you can have, don't go to Hell House or something along those lines. Something to entice you not to go to this place, right? The location for this was known as the Wykehurst Park House in Essex. That'd be East Sussex, England. Just a pure note, I thought it was kind of curious. There have been three other films that have been filmed in the same location. All Colors of the Dark from 72, Demons of the Mind also in 72, and The Chosen from 1977. Thought that was kind of interesting. Now, a little trivia for you. The writer, Richard Matheson, toned down the graphic violence and the more intense sexual scenes from his novel to do the screenplay for this film, adding a more brooding atmosphere for it. And the film The Haunting from 1963 is often compared to this movie and vice versa. So I think that's something that's kind of interesting. And I would definitely agree with that statement. I do find the two films to share a very good haunting-like behaviors between them. In fact, if you were going to watch these films, I would definitely suggest watching them back-to-back with each other. I think that would be a really cool thing to do. So the film was spoofed in Bloodbath at the House of Death in 1984 and also in Scary Movie 2 from 2001. It has been referenced in, of course, The Watcher in the Woods from 1980, The Shining from 1980, Waxworks 2, Lost in Time, The Haunted, that's a film from 1995, again, The Scary Movie 2, The Others from 2001, and The Rose Red TV miniseries from 2002. And I would definitely also say, if you're going to watch another kind of film like that, that should be another one added into the mix of these three movies. You could really get into a lot of haunted house films. I think it's been a while since we really truly had a haunted house type of movie. We have a lot of these paranormal films that are coming in over the top. And, you know, we have the, you know, weird walking people, extended arms, legs, all kinds of things. But we're missing that truly haunted house, gothic feel to a film. Just something that is rarity to have. I mean, The Others from 2001 had it. And I think it's just something we're missing. Now, The Legend of Hell House is creepy. Yes, it's atmospheric horror. Definitely. Good story? Yes. We got a good ghost story supporting in it. The lighting, the makeup, the camera work, very few special effects. It's all built for very effective storytelling, if you would. And I like that very much. And I know a lot of people think when they hear Hell House, they're thinking of that kind of found footage films. I think it was Hell House and then Hell House 2 and 3. I could get that feel, but this film is not that. This is a narrative piece, not the more of a found footage. I think that film could stand alone over there by itself. And again, would be a fine adaptation to put into a night of haunted houses, if you would. So think about it, watching The Legend of Hell House, right? You're going to probably want to put The Changeling in there from 1980, Rose Red from, I think it was 2002, The Haunting from 1963, and to top it out, I would say put one of those Hell House movies into it also. I think that would be a perfect setup for one particular night. Now, the film does begin with a very rich old guy meeting with the physicist and an amateur parapsychologist. He offers the man £100,000 to investigate the most haunted house in the world, the Death House, nicknamed Hell House. And it seems that the last nine people who have investigated this place, only one of them came out alive. And from there, we get the story of how the house determines what's happening. It's a godforsaken house of secrets. And again, haunted houses don't always deliver the goods because you have a careful line there. Too far, it's comical. Too less, it's wordy and the pacing feels off. So you do have a lot of things. We have to just work it just right. And those five films I just named, I think, would all just fit in perfectly to give you that. So this is a film you definitely would like to make a marathon out of. Watch it on a nice spooky Saturday night. You know, start about 6 o'clock, and you just watch each film back to back to back to back to back. And I think if you do that, excuse me, you end up around 3 o'clock in the morning, yes, but face it, it'll be a hell of a night for you. Get some pizzas in, get some other treats in, have everybody kind of nestle around one big couch kind of scene. I've done this. It's fun as ever, and if you're especially watching in a house that's a little bit old and it's got its own creaks and things it does on its own, it would definitely add to the scare factor of the night. It's an excellent performance all around. First-rate direction, of course. Again, production values are right there. You could tell from my entire tone here that I really do enjoy this movie a lot. I've seen it many, many times. It's got the setting that it's around Christmas Eve, so that's really good to watch around the holidays, too. So, again, this is a film that, you know, you should really watch at any given time. And I think it's also a film that, again, I would have to definitely say that it should be put in for a five-film feature night. So you line up all your movies, get them figured out on your streaming sites, and you watch these five movies. And that should give me the heebie-jeebies and the jeeper creepers and the, you know, squimmish little times. I think it'll give you a lot of things going on there. Really gothic films overall. And there's nothing wrong with that. You don't always need a big blood count all over the place. You don't need blood splatter everywhere. Sometimes you can get a lot more bang for the buck if you're going for a little bit. So definitely be aware of all of that. I did put a link down on the script there for Amazon. I don't get any payback on that or anything else. But if you want to, you can go to Amazon.com and you can check that out. Get the Blu-ray, which is how I watched the film again, and that is pretty cool. So with that being said, I'm going to be playing another band here. This is the Bloodstrings with the track Cannibal. The band is found on Facebook, Bandcamp, and Verbal Nation, and the thanks goes out to the label Undead Artists, found on Bandcamp. So enjoy that. Welcome to Thursday, June 8th, and the film was Cannibal Girls from 1973, rated R, an hour and 24 minutes long, obviously celebrating 50 years. This is known as a comedy horror film, although I would say the comedy is definitely more of the black humor type here. This is not a scary movie type of comedy, by no means. The director was Ivan Reitman, that's right, of Ghostbusters fame. The writers were Robert Sandler, Daniel Goldberg, and again, Ivan Reitman there. So that helps you there. And as for the stars, Eugene Levy, Andrea Martin, Bonnie Nielsen, Ronald Urich, and Randall Carpenter. The film that put it out, or the company actually said put out the film, is AIP, American International Pictures. Our summary, a young couple spend the night in an old farmhouse owned by a reverend, only to find out that it's also lived in by beautiful women who are hungry for human flesh. This film got a 4.6 out of 10. I don't know if I give it that much. I'm still debating that in my head. The film had an original release date of June 8th, 1973 in Canada. And the taglines for it, we have four of them. All right, ready? Here we go. And again, I do try to give the infliction when it is needed for certain of these taglines. So if they're in caps, I will be shouting. These girls eat men. All right. They do exactly what you think they do. They love every man they meet. First to death, then for dinner. And lastly, the picture with the warning bell. When it rings, close your eyes if you're squeamish. Yes. Okay, so the first one is playing off of some innuendo there. And the others, well, we'll get to especially that last one about the bell. Oh, God. Oh, God. Why did they do it? Why? All right. Trivia. The budget for this movie was $9,000. Looks like it's all $9,000 right on the screen. So that should tell you everything you need to know. The film was referenced, believe it or not, in Ghostbusters 2 in 1998 and Delta Delta Die, a video film there from 2003. It was featured in Invasion of the Scream Queens from 92 and also Nightmare in Canada, the Canadian horror on film documentary, which was a TV movie from 2004. You can find the film on Pluto TV. Now for my thoughts on the film. It's a pretty okay example of the gory, glory days of the drive-ins and grindhouse. So know that. It's a hard-to-find film. It is not going to be an easy one for you to find out there. It's sometimes, you know, I'm probably saying that you may find it on DVD. There have been some films that have some pretty hard cuts of this movie. So finding that you have the full one is a rarity to know. Basically, if you can look past the bad acting, the plot holes in the storyline, and the lack of gore when it should be really big on that, you could maybe find yourself liking the movie. Look, you know what to expect when you see the words cannibal in any movie title out there. I mean, face it, Cannibal Holocaust, Cannibal Ferox, you know what you're expecting me to see these movies. There's no great surprise for anybody. The story, 100% weird. It is Weirdville. I mean, very strange, very odd movie. Not a hell of a making sense in the entire film. But I want you to be aware of that. Don't go into this thinking, oh, this is my typical cannibal movie. No, not going to be happening. And again, the gore and the blood are really weirdly mixed there. I mean, sometimes it should be more gore, sometimes it should be less gore. It doesn't have a consistent level to it. You definitely have one consistency, cheapness. You can see that everywhere throughout this entire movie where the cheapness is. You know clearly where the money was spent and where it wasn't. The sets are very cheap. Film quality is cheap. The acting is just what you can think of. The story is really nutso, if you would. It just, you know, not a lot of things make a lot of sense in a movie. I think really in the end, it's a total misfire. And the reason I use that word misfire is because of what the American International Pictures did to the film. They decided to tack in this kind of weird doorbell sound to warn the viewers of the shock sequences that were coming. Why they did that, I really don't know. But they did. And it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense, but they just want to go, hey, everybody, here's a little secret passcode we're putting into the film. Why? Isn't the object of horror to shock the audience? You don't see us ever doing that again in any movie, and it's never happened before. Well, you might get your musical cues, and if you can pick up on them, that will help you. But you don't see somebody running around with a little dinner bell going, ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling. I mean, really, think about it. Would you want to hear this sound? Really? You want to hear that sound in the middle of your movie to warn you that the scary scene is coming up? Seriously? I mean, come on. Really? I mean, obviously I'm not using a doorbell sound there because I don't have one of those. But, you know, here we go with a bell. I mean, same kind of concept, right? So, yeah, total misfire. You got it. So with that being said, moving right into the next film for everybody. We're going to be playing from the artist Carl Casey, the track Bad Omen. He is found on Bandcamp, also whitebataudio.com and Instagram. We do have a bit of a music video up there, so you guys can check that out. And shortly, you'll be able to hear me talk about our Friday film. All right, so welcome to Friday, June 9th, with the film Damien, Omen 2, from 1978. Rated R, 1 hour and 47 minutes long, celebrating its 45th anniversary. Obviously a horror movie with religious tones throughout the movie. The directors were Don Taylor and Mike Hodges, who was listed as uncredited, but Mike Hodges was removed about partway through the film, and Don replaced him. We'll get into all those reasons in just a moment. The writers were Harvey Bernhard, David Seltzer, Stanley Mann, and, of course, Mike Hodges, who were helping out there in the writing. As for those who starred in the film, here we go. We got William Holden, Lee Grant, Jonathan Scott Taylor, Robert Foxworth, Nicholas Pryor, Lou Aries, Lance Heckerson, Sylvia Sidney, and Alan Arbus, just to name a couple out there for you all. And the company that put it out was 20th Century Fox. And the summary, here we go. Damien the Antichrist, now about to turn 13 years old, finally learns of his destiny. Under the guidance of an unholy discipline of Satan, he shall rise in power. Meanwhile, dark forces begin to eliminate all those who suspect the child's true identity. Out of 10, this film got a 6.2, so just say 6. It was originally released on June 5th of 1978. We have 4 taglines. 2 of these are almost similar in everything, the way they're presented. And the other 2, well, take it for what it's worth. So here we go. The son of Satan is now 13. Obviously wants to play off of the number 13 of, you know, that, right? Couldn't you just say the son of Satan? And that would have been all you needed for your tagline. I mean, that's it, right? There's no more we need. Son of Satan. That's it. We're done. Move along. All right, here we go. The next one. First time was only a warning. All right. Now, I want you to really listen to these next 2 taglines. We'll go over where do they differ afterwards. So here we go. These eyes will follow you wherever you go, and you will experience a new dimension of fear. All right? Next one. These eyes will follow you wherever you go, and your nightmares will become a frightening reality. So, those 2 change right after the word and. So we get that first series of words and an and then they change after that. Either way, they're too damn long. The audience is not going to stare at that poster for that period of time and give you all that attention. Not going to happen. Again, they're 3 to 5 words long, and pretty much they're looking for a 3. That's what they're getting to. Occasionally, they would get to a 5, but really what they want to do is leave that as an actual preview on the screen. So be aware of that. The film was partially done at the Northwestern Military Academy in Wisconsin. Now, the film had a budget of $5.2 million, and that was then ballooned up to $6.8 with marketing and other aspects like that. But it did gross $26.5 million. All right, so a little bit of trivia for this particular film. The film's original director, Mike Hodges, had the flair for the dramatic and artistic that can be seen in a lot of the number of the visual references. Now, the reason he gets removed from the film, though, is quite interesting. his attitude was pretty much strictly business towards the cast and crew. Really, lay down the law, and this is what we're going to do. And this could have been what led to his dismissal by producer Harvey Bernhard, who then went on to hire Don Taylor. And the production was shut down for about a week to let Don get up to speed about everything that's happening in the filming schedule. And once he was on set, the atmosphere kind of changed a lot. It was more relaxed, more energetic. He more or less allowed the actors to develop some their own quirks, their own type of way of doing things. So think about Hodges was like, whatever the script said, that's what you had to read those lines. So if there was a typo, then you were reading the typo unless someone stood there and fixed the typo, and then you could go with, ah, now we can do it that way too. And of course, if that had happened, a typo, somebody would have been in a lot of trouble. In this way, with Don Taylor at the head of it all, the cast and crew got along a lot better. There was a lot less problems for things, and that worked really, really well for everybody. Jonathan Scott Taylor revealed his characterization of Damien was based, at least partly inspired by the film Carrie from 1976. What else? There's so much to talk about in this film. William Holden was originally the choice to star in the first film, The Omen from 76, but he turned it down because he did not want to star in a picture about the devil. Now, when Gregory Peck, was selected for as his replacement, Peck's argument was he didn't want to do a horror film. So they told him, no, it's not a horror film. It's a religious thriller with a lot of psychological overtones in it. Oh! And, of course, then Gregory Peck went with, oh, I get it. And he then jumped at making the movie. So not wanting to miss out again on that kind of box office, William Holden said, screw it, I'm going to do the film. And, again, it went on to become a huge hit. And, you know, Holden just wanted to make sure he didn't turn down that sequel role. And, of course, the popularity of the name Damien plummeted as a result of this film. And it's the first one. Just a side note for all you horror fans out there, there's Damien Leone, the creator and director of the film Terrifier, and also Art the Clown character creature, if you would. So, yeah, it tells you a lot there. You may get rid of the name Damien, but it still has the power to influence to this day. You just have that. Now, of course, The film, like I said, the cadets from the military academy, they're all real students at the military school. And if you remember the part in the film where Damien makes the astonishing moment, if you would, of his true power with his teacher for knowing all the dates to infamous activities that occurred, all of that kind of is harking back to the medieval legends of the Antichrist that one would find if they really study the text, and develops intellectually at a superhuman speed, almost a demonic parody of what Jesus was like at 12 years old in Luke, that would be chapter 2, verses 40 through 47, which has been very much studied by the Hebrew scholars. So it is something you can read. It's something you should read and just you're aware of. All right, so what is the film reference? Well, it references The Birds from 1963 and Carrie from 76. It was featured in The Witching Hour from 1996, The Omen Legacy, which was a TV movie from 2001, and Nightmares in Red, White, and Blue, The Evolution of the American Horror Film from 2009. It follows, obviously, The Omen from 1976 and was followed by The Final Conflict from 81, Omen 4, The Awakening, a TV movie from 91, Damien, TV series from 2016, and On the Horizon is going to be the first Omen from 2023. All right, so enjoy all that. Let that all kind of sink in, right? Let it really get into your soul, because now we're going to get into my opinions about the film. There's a lot of macabre moments that are really well executed, particularly the most notable death sequences. There are some really great ones there, so definitely be aware of them. I find the film to be overall entertaining and very good example of a big-budget mainstream horror with those religious horror undertones. Really taps into a lot of the religious theme horror that's going on. Focuses now really on Damien more than any other character because he is now the rise of the Antichrist. The story arc comes quite close to the original template they had. With the more frequent, inventive, gory death scenes, involving the poor and fortunate souls who get too close to the truth. So that's great there. We have a strong sequel, obviously, well acted, few surprises. I really like the scene where Damien discovers his high IQ. I feel that the film did squander Lance Henriksen a bit much there and should have definitely given him more to do with his particular role. It just feels like he's just there like a cog. He doesn't really generate enough for anybody. So Damien, with that, the high IQ and everything else, it shows how powerful he can be, using his powers to kill people by just kind of almost like thinking or looking at them. His anger, whatever he needs to destroy is in his path. He can get rid of it. But at the same time, he's being taught how to temper that, how if he makes it so obvious that there can be problems for him and that he needs to kind of temper it back and use it when he really wants to. And that's something that you do see him kind of learning. There's always a couple of these scenes in the film where, you know, he's getting all the girls, he's getting all the power, the money, everything else. And he just kind of has an air about himself as he walks closer to the door, where he's standing there with this kind of military acknowledgement of, I know who I am. I know what power I hold, and you are all going to bow down before me as I speak and stand here. So there's a lot of those elements right there. Whether that was intentional or not, I think it was really great. There's a lot of moments for everyone to kind of really get into that film. It's nowhere near as good as the original, but it does keep one entertained for the entire film. I really do stress that. Again, it's found on Blu-ray. You can go to Amazon and find the Omen Collection Blu-ray package there, so be aware of that. The other band that's going to be playing here is going to be Dead, that's D-E-D, by Midnight. And, of course, Midnight spelled the fancy way if you want to, not the professional or clean way. The track is Horror Hospital, and you're going to find this band on Facebook and Instagram. I also believe on Bandcamp, if I'm not mistaken, so definitely check them out in all three areas. All right, so enjoy the music.
Now covered going on with that girl last night? And what goes on downstairs behind those locked doors, eh?
So welcome to the end of the week, June 10th, Saturday. Now, let me tell you first the film and how this day actually went together for us. The film is called SX underscore tape 2013. It's a rated R. It's an hour and 22 minutes long, and it's celebrating a 10-year anniversary. I actually watched this film very late on Saturday. I had finished a very long day of doing a fundraiser outside for the Multiple Sclerosis Association of America. It's one of those things I believe in giving back on, and it's something that we do a lot of around here. And then after that, had a kind of a party I had to attend that evening. So I went to that too. So, you know, got home and I said, all right, just want to relax. Somebody put something on. I don't care what it is. Just do something. So there goes someone selecting this film. I don't know why they did it, but that's what they did. It is a horror movie. The director was Bernard Rose. The writer was Eric Reese. It stars Caitlin Foley, Ian Duncan, Diana Garcia, Chris Coyne, Julie Marcus, and Stephen Propster. The company that put it out was Wellgo USA Entertainment. The summary for this particular film is interesting enough. Jill's an artist, Adam's a filmmaker, and their love life is off the chain. There's no experience too wild, too dangerous, no dare they won't take. Not even when Jill lets Adam strap her into a gurney in an abandoned hospital, they're scoping out for their next art show. But he shouldn't have left her alone, not even as a joke. Now Jill's hookup with horror has awakened something in that place. Something with a lust for more than flesh. This film got a 3.4 out of 10. I'd have given it a 3 or downgrade that even more. Let's see here. Well, the release date was May 16th of, believe it or not, I think it was 2013. 2013. I don't know why my brain just kind of went dead all of a sudden. Maybe it was because I watched this movie. 1 week with two really duddy type of films in it. The budget for it was $600,000. It grossed $4,900. That is a complete and total loss. Absolutely 100% loss. Unless somebody needed to have what they call a dog in the show that you needed to really lose money on, then you to offset your winnings that year, fine. Otherwise, no. There's no point to this movie. Really isn't. Basically, we have a girl interviewed by the police, mentions that there's a tape of her boyfriend that is now dead and two others are missing. And wow, let's watch the tape. It's one of those, yes, a found footage movie. And we basically see that tape. Basically, a guy that films his girlfriend at all the times. The story of SX underscore tape isn't anything new. It's not original. And then we just put it this way. That missing E, because it's basically supposed to be sex tape. You get it now? That missing E does not stand for excellent, exciting, exquisite. Sorry, none of that is there. Basically, I think the thing is probably saying extinguish the movie, something about or maybe erase the film from existence. It's just that kind of movie. You know, the huge trend in low budget films over the course of the years has been the found footage movies. People basically being put into a horrible situation, ghostly apparitions, massacres, aliens, whatever it may be, all cut on the, you know, the camera. And then there's always a reason of why you're filming and what that is. Here with the title, I know they're trying to play off of the TNA a lot. They got the sexy kind of girl on the cover. They've got that night vision image also going through there. But there really isn't a lot of skin in the game, so to speak. They talk about the act constantly. So much, right? The characters are supposedly having the act. You really don't see anything, which I don't really care one way or the other. I'd rather have a narrative without it. It's fine with me. I mean, if you want to see this kind of stuff, that's fine. You could go watch an adult entertainment and probably see more of it. We're just basically surf the net. I guess you could find some there too. If you're looking for that cheap thrill, there's a few of them out there, not a ton. I would have to say the biggest thing for me in the film is the characters. The first is the characters, and then the story. Neither one is works well with each other. The characters are not coming through really well. The actors are not able to convey these characters well. The storyline is really hodgepodge. It's all over the place. I have a lot of problems with it. I need something that entertains me, and this really I found very annoying. It was a point where I just wanted to literally stop the movie and go count the money from our tally that we had done for the day. But then people were like, didn't you already count the money? I said, yes, I know. That's how much I want to do it again. This, what I'm watching on the screen, was just that. Basically, we got Joe and Adam decide to sneak into this place to make a sex tape. However, mostly they are just rummaging through the old building, which, of course, as all of these buildings are always the same, if it serves to be an abandoned building, why in the world is the light still working? You may say, well, maybe the electricity got left on. Okay, but the bulbs themselves, things do fall apart over time. Ceiling tiles should have fallen out. There should be huge water stains. Some part of it, the ceiling should have collapsed by now. There should be, why is the water working in the building? Why are all these things still working? Because the building's not abandoned. It's another problem I have with found footage films. Either you're the actor's problem, or the story, why the cameras are running, the story problem, or the bigger one. You have these different things in your building working. Electricity. Who's paying the damn electricity bill? I mean, you what? They're just giving it away for free? Why is the lights working? Why? I don't understand. Why are those lights working? If you're sneaking around this place, you mean no one ever comes out to look for anything? You mean there is no trap cameras watching for people entering the building? What is another one? Again, water working, right? The water works. Why would the water work? I mean, let's face it. It doesn't happen. Places that get foreclosed on don't have these things working still. They don't work because they're taken out and they're not working anymore. Here, they're working. Why? Because it's not abandoned. The building falling apart a lot of times? No. The building's not falling apart. They're not showing all that. Why? Because, again, they got to use this building for something else during the day. And they're not don't want you to remove ceiling tiles or have water stains everywhere or walls are crumbling. None of that seems to be happening. And that seems always to be a problem for me. Another thing is, when the building like this, a hospital or something, closes, all of a sudden there's all these patient files left around. Really? Always? I mean, that's kind of weird, right? It's a little on the warp side of life. It depends how you want to go with this one. If you're interested in something like this, you're going to love it. If you're not, and you're like me, and you didn't find it to be that enthralling, then I would say stay away from this particular film. There's just really nothing here that's really going to get your attention. You can find the film on Plex and Prime, so be aware of that. And with that being said, it's time for us to close out our show with our customary track. It's Bloody Hammers with Welcome to the Horror Show. And you're going to find them on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Bandcamp. And, of course, we put the video for that particular one out there. So enjoy that. Please take the time to like us on The Baron's Crypt on Facebook and also The Horror Times on Facebook. Again, if we get to 5,000, that's when we're going to start launching out our giveaways, so definitely be in the market for them. They're hopefully going to get out Our goal is to probably try to get out about 5, maybe 6 before the end of the year. That is our intended goal. We'll have to see how that all goes through. And it basically comes down to the sooner we get the 5,000 and maybe and be able to maintain the 5,000. So if you're somebody joins and we got 5,000 and then, oh, you get a prize package or something, and you say, I don't care, I'm going to bail off, and we go back down, bang, we're going to stop it right there. We're not going to be sending out these ones until we get there. That's a kind of a little mission. We're about 37 followers away from 5,000, so we're so close. So definitely be looking for that. With that being said, thanks for tuning in to Baron Crazy's Vision of Horror, episode number 23, covering the week of June 4th to June 10th.
Shame are so far out of range. The blame is left.